Well, good morning. It's a Thursday. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning in, for joining us today. And we will warn you in advance that one of the things we'll be talking about will possibly give you more impetus to overeat at lunch, because we're going to be talking about something that's really, really yummy in the course of this. This is not, however, a food program. We're not going to have Emeril Lagasse as a special guest or any of that sort of thing. Although we may be talking about cupcakes, like those folks up there in Baltimore, the bakers who are kind of wild and crazy. And that's, we'll get into that a little bit more. By the way, you can always join us, no matter what the topic of conversation is, at 414-123. Local here in Tallahassee. If it's long distance from you to us, the number is 800-926-8809. We have an email address, which is perspectives@wfsu.org, and also a Twitter account at WFSU Perspective, in case you want to interface with us that way. You know, few of us can probably imagine being a child. It may have been a long time for some of us here. But think of a child whose young life has been nothing but a series of just one catastrophe after another. And a child who then perhaps goes on to get tangled all up in the legal system for whatever reason. Well, that kind of situation really does redefine the word alone. But there is help in the form of the Guardian Ad Litem program. It's a dedicated team of grown-ups who volunteer their time and talents to help troubled kids navigate the rocks and reefs of the legal system. So today on Perspectives, we'll be taking a look at that Guardian Ad Litem program in North Florida's Second Judicial Circuit. And we're also going to be here about an upcoming happening, that tasty happening we made reference to. And we'll tell you how that'll provide more help for this very worthwhile effort as well. So let's say good morning and hi to First, Deborah Moore, head of the Second Judicial Circuit Guardian Ad Litem Program. Deborah, thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting us. I'm very proud to be here and share with the listeners all the great things we're doing in the program.
Can't wait to hear that. But, of course, you need help in doing this, since we said it's a volunteer effort. And we know that the courts in Florida are not swimming in cash. So being a volunteer program, we need help from a group like Child Advocates, too. And that's where Brian Seeley comes in. Board President?
That's right, Board President.
Wow. Okay. For 2 years, you were saying.
For 2 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
And none the worse for wear, I can tell. Now, that event we were talking about there that's going to be coming up on February 8th, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
If my memory serves, is going to be spearheaded by Christine Lamont. She is – you got to get this title here – Cupcakes and Cookies for Kids event chair.
That's correct.
Do you have a business card that says that?
No, not yet. I have a lot of information with my name on it, but no cards yet.
Want to find out about that event here in just a minute, Christine, so hang on for that. But first, Deborah Moore, for those folks who don't know, what really is the Guardian Ad Litem program? We talked about kids in the legal system, but what really is it?
Yeah, the Guardian Ad Litem program is a statewide program. We have 20 Guardian Ad Litem programs in the state. And I'm the director of the Second Judicial Circuit Guardian Ad Litem program. And our main office is here in Tallahassee, and we have another office in Gadsden County. And our Guardian Ad Litem program covers the surrounding Big Bend area, the six counties. The majority of the children that we represent are from Tallahassee, but we go as far as Liberty County in Bristol, and in the other direction, Apalachicola, Franklin County. Currently, we're supporting about 450 or 60 children, with the help of about 340 guardian ad litem advocates. And our program is very special because it is volunteer-based. Our staff, who are attorneys and case coordinators, partner with individuals in the community who serve as a guardian ad litem advocate or a supporter for the child and help us to represent the best interest of every child. In fact, our mission is very simple. It's advocating for the best interest of abused and neglected children is our only interest.
Now, you mentioned that you have some staff attorneys who help with the administration of the program overall, but the guardians themselves, the volunteer guardians, are not necessarily attorneys, right?
No, they don't have to be attorneys. They don't have to have any special training. We do provide a lot of initial training and ongoing training for our advocates, but our guardians are from all walks of life, and they come to us wanting to make things better for children. The legal representation for the children in the courts, which is a big part of what we do, is managed by our attorneys. So the guardians bring our attorneys and us the information we need to be able to provide an educated recommendation on the child's behalf.
Okay. Brian Seale, you're a guardian. How did you get involved in that?
It's a long story. We actually got involved, got introduced to Deborah. I co-founded another nonprofit maybe 5 years ago now. And it was called Tally Ties. It is called Tally Ties. It still exists. And every year we adopted an existing nonprofit. Our first nonprofit was – our first organization, I should say, was the Guardian Ad Litem Program. And, from that experience, just seeing the dedication, the work, the impact that it made locally – it was just hard to walk away. And when our year ended, Deborah called me up and she said, "Look, Brian, we could definitely still use your involvement." And we met many times and decided to continue to go forward. And it's been a great decision.
God, that's fabulous. You too, Christine Lamont, you're a guardian as well.
That's correct. I had first been exposed to guardian ad litem through a lunch and learn program that was presented. And I was working full time at the time and thought, well, I don't have quite enough time to devote to that with family and everything else. But when and a lot of people are able to work and do that. But when I retired, they were the first on my list. So I signed up for the training because I was trying to think what matters, how do I want to be useful or helpful in retirement? And kids are very important to me. Children are very important. And particularly kids who maybe don't have all the advantages of my two-parent family and the stability and all the things that I had. And so if I can, make a difference for some children, that's important to me. So I signed up.
Okay. Well, Deborah Moore, there have to be – you remember – oh, God, I'm too old. There used to be an intro for a particular TV program called The Naked City. I think it was in black and white, back when TVs were powered by coal or something. But the positioning line for that was there are 8 million stories in The Naked City, and this is one of them. It's kind of the same thing, though, with Guardian Ad Litem program. Each of these children, each of these kids has his or her own story, and then your guardians have to be able to deal with that particular story. It's not a cookie-cutter thing, right?
No, it's not. The majority of the children that we serve have been involved, unfortunately, in neglect types of situations. And many times that's because their parent or parents are struggling with substance abuse. Sometimes domestic violence is involved. Their financial situation has contributed to that. And some of the families are dealing with poverty. But some of the children we represent have been physically abused, unfortunately, or sexually abused. And it is very, very difficult. It's difficult to know that children have been subjected and dealing with these difficult situations. And you mentioned earlier about how troubling it is to think of individuals coming in and telling the children that because of what's going on in their family, they have to go to another place and be removed from their home. And the trauma that involves for the children is just heartbreaking. And it really keeps us going every day to know that that's happened for the children that we support and just wanting to make it better for them. Our hope is that they can go back to their home if they've been removed. But we want to make sure that the families receive the help that they need, that the children can be safe now, that they can thrive. And if they have been removed, we try to do everything we can to make their situation better, as I mentioned. We go into the schools. We talk to the teachers if they're having trouble with school. We try to collaborate with the teachers and their caregivers to help the children get back on a path of educational success and that they progress in school if they have behavioral or mental health issues. And many of them do, of course, because of what they've gone through. We make sure they get the counseling and they get the support and be with people who provide that expertise and can help the children and their families with better mental health and have well-being in their lives. That's really what we try to do every single day. And the beauty of our program, I feel like, is that right now we've reached the success of that 97% of the children that we're appointed to in the child welfare system have a guardian ad litem advocate. And we've never been able to say that before. And so we've worked very hard on recruitment. We've worked hard so that every child has their own special person that's looking out for them and paying attention to what's going on with them and their troubles that they're having and how we can make that better. So we're very excited about that. We've been working on the educational advocacy, as I mentioned, and we're trying to develop more success with I think we have close to 100 of our guardians are certified as educational advocates now. And so each and every one of our advocates, just like Christine and Brian, care so much about what's happening in the children's lives. And we just want to keep doing everything we can do with the community support to do the best job that we possibly can do.
Coming up on a break, but right after that, we will talk about that community support, not only through your organization, Brian, but also, Christine, what you have coming up on February the 8th that the whole community can kind of plug into when it comes to helping out the Guardian Ad Litem program. So many things that we have heard, particularly as it relates to child welfare in the news from the past couple of years, and it's not just Florida. Every state has a situation where kids need care, and children in the foster program sometimes just kind of fall through the cracks, and there are horror stories here. But to have a program like Guardian Ad Litem to step in, to be the advocate, to be the person who has the kids back, because none of us can imagine just someone coming to our house and dragging us out bodily and saying, no, you can't be here anymore. You know, we have to get you to a safer place. It's got to be traumatizing for anybody, and particularly for kids whose lives may already be, you know, a real just series of horrors that they've been through. We want to remind you, you can be part of this conversation too. Perhaps you have a story to share or a concern or a question for our panel. Deborah Moore, head of the Second Judicial Circuit Guardian Ad Litem Program, Brian Seeley, Board President of Child Advocates 2, and Christine Lamont, Cupcakes and Cookies for Kids Event Chair. More on that to come right here in Perspectives. 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809, long distance and perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. Guardian Ad Litem program for Florida's Second Judicial Circuit, which is headquartered here in Tallahassee, what we're talking about here on Perspectives today. And if you have a story relating to child welfare, because there are so many stories out there, and we want to get into some of them here this morning, give us a ring at 414-1234 and let us know that. Before we get into it, though, if you're just joining us, you may not have heard of the Cupcakes and Cookies for Kids event. So, Christine Lamont, I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that, what it is, and how people can find out more and get involved.
Okay. Well, basically, it is a friendly competition among bakers in the community. We have either professional, adult amateurs, or three levels of children competing, you know, elementary, middle, and high school. So it's a friendly competition. You bring in your scratch-baked cookies or a cake, and it's a friendly competition to judge who wins. We have a number of, levels, like not levels, but I guess categories. You can pick a Valentine's theme or a 21 and over, so you use alcohol in making your cupcake, or celebrate Florida. We have a number of them. And so you enter, you sign up online at www.gal2.org/cupcake. There's all kinds of information there. You can register online and see what you'd like to enter into. You can also purchase tickets. Actually, anyone can come into the competition, but if you would like to sample the cupcake or the cookies. You buy a ticket, and there's stamps on it, and you exchange the stamp for a cupcake or a cookie. And so that's how it goes. So a family can share one ticket, or friends can share a ticket. And the tickets cost $20, but again, you can end up with, you know, quite a few cupcakes or cookies for that. And so we think it's fun because it's a chance for parents and the younger children to bake together, or for kids like with Food Network, and a lot of people are interested in food these days, so they can enter their recipes. And again, it's friendly. We have some local judges. Keith Baxter from Cool Beans and Joey Gans from Au Pêche Mignon have agreed to be judges for us. There is no – the judging is all before the event occurs, so it's not any kind of chopped or anything nerve-wracking. But I think it'll be a fun time for everybody, and it's going to be at the Leon High School cafeteria. So we've centrally located. Leon's been, you know, nicely agreed to do this with us, give us this space, so that people from all areas of the county or the district can come in.
Okay, and that's February 8th, which is a Saturday.
Yes, from 2 to 4 p.m. If you buy your tickets online in advance, you can get in 30 minutes early, so you can get your, you know, get first dibs on things that you think would be good to eat.
Yeah, the earlier the fresher,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Sometimes things can go quickly. If somebody likes something particular, you know, well, they can disappear.
Well, Brian Seeley, let's get into one of those stories there. Since you are a guardian, you've been involved in the program here. And anything that – any of the experiences you've had that, you know, just stands out is either heartwarming or something, yeah, that, I mean, you're still kind of shedding tears over.
You know, the good thing is I got so many. You know, I really have so many that has just really made this a blessing of an experience. You know, I can share one recently. You know, it's with the theme of football that's going on right now, and you know, you see these players on television. We won the national championship, but what a lot of people don't know is that they've opened their doors to us earlier, like in the middle of the season, as a matter of fact, during their bye week. Jimbo Fisher and the FSU staff opened up their entire Moore Athletic Center and allowed child advocates to. We brought in about 75 children. And, you know, the story that really stands out was that there was this one kid who the guardian said, you know, didn't speak, you know, was going through a real tough time and, you know, wasn't speaking at all. But the day that he was going to go and meet Jameis Winston and the FSU team, he opened the morning going to school. He was just full of excitement, and the guardian was just shocked because he didn't that's your voice. And to really make it even better, when he got there and we got to meet the players, one of the receivers gave him his gloves, and we have a picture with him just holding these huge gloves in his hands. And, you know, that was just – it was a great experience. They got to go behind the scenes, and it was also great for me because I got to speak to a lot of, you know, the younger kids, the older kids, and they got to share with me what their dreams are, their aspirations are. And it was just another opportunity to just have a nice, you know, touch with them. But that was great.
My gosh. And Deborah Moore, that's the type of experience that I think anybody would treasure. And for these kids who maybe haven't had a lot of experiences worth treasuring, that must have been huge.
Yeah, it was probably one of the best experiences I've had in my 15 years. It was really, really wonderful. And as the director, to see so many of our children there all at one time, getting an experience that, you know, normalcy is so important for our kids. You know, they really need to have the opportunities that other children have and not be left out of situations. And the story that he's telling, that stands out in my mind as well. And I have a picture of the little guy and his guardian heading into the room where we all got to meet everybody, and they were holding hands. And just to see them be able to come together and share that experience together, and for the guardian to see the child he represents so happy and so excited, it just really did a lot for me to see that happen. And everyone that was involved in coordinating that just welcomed us with open arms, and they were just so generous and just so attentive to us. You know, we watched the practice, and then at the end of the practice, all the players came over and spent time with the children and signed autographs on posters that the children could take back. And You know, we have so many community supporters that, you know, really believe in what we do and want to help us to be successful. And that's so energizing. It's so helpful because you're right. We're always fighting for a budget and, you know, more to do more. But we've really been successful because of not just the legislative support, but the support in the community. The support that our nonprofit gives us is just invaluable. Recently, I had a staff come to me and talk with me about tapping into the funds that they're talking about raising and that we need so much to make things happen for the children. And the children are all separated and don't get to see each other very often. And that just breaks my heart when children are together and they're not just taken out of a situation that they're accustomed to and that they're familiar with. But then they end up having to go to different placements because they all can't be together. And one of the things our guardians are just so fantastic about is in helping to communicate with all those caregivers and find a way, some way, so that they can come together and be with each other. And that's so important. And so we were talking about that we needed some funds to be able to take them to a museum, take them to McDonald's, take them to a movie, and have them have some special time together. And, you know, just those funds, to be able to have those, it's just so – those funds aren't available any other way from any other resource. So supporting our nonprofit is really important so that we can make some important things happen for children.
Yeah, that sense of isolation for the kids who were caught in this kind of circumstance has to be overwhelming. And to have a situation where they can be brought and interface and talk a little bit, gee, what happened to you? I don't know what happened. Suddenly you don't feel so alone.
Yeah, and there was a huge focus on that last year. Well, there always has been, but they received legislative support for the Normalcy Act, Let Kids Be Kids Act. And we've been doing everything we can do to educate our guardians on that we're in such a great position to support that. You know, we can ask about, you know, what activities are they able to participate in? Are they participating in after-school activities? If they're interested in sports, is someone helping them get involved in those? You know, just paving the way for them. It is really important. Now our guardians can drive. For the past couple of years, we've been able to lift that
They drove
restriction.
Them out to FSU.
Yeah,
that day,
many
you know?
Of the guardians yeah. picked them up, brought them out there. We've never been able to do that before. And so now that just is another way of facilitating that normalcy process for children. So we have over almost close to 100 of our 340 guardians are approved to drive the children now.
God, that would seem like such a normal thing.
Well, and you think about, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I talk to people and, you know, they can't put into conception exactly, well, how is that, why is that so important? And you think, you know, you think you're 16 years old and you've already gone through a lot, okay? You're fortunate to have a guardian that treats you like their own. And, you know, you want to go to the movies with your friends and you can't go. You know, you want to go out to, you know, a birthday party. And guess what? You can't go because no one could take you. So, you know, just being able for them to, for the first time in their lives, be normal. It's, you know, I was smiling earlier when she was talking about, you know, she did everything that she can. And I'll tell you that Deborah Moore is probably the biggest advocate that these children have. I remember, you know, we went down, there was a press conference, I guess, when they were first. The normalcy bill hadn't passed yet, but it was kind of on our agenda of getting things done. And so there was a press conference that Governor Rick Scott was going to be at. And so, you know, most people, okay, I want to go to the press conference and take a couple photos. And not Deborah. Deborah's like, hey, we're going to go down there. We're going to meet Rick Scott and we're going to get in front of him and speak to him. And I'm like, hey, if you want to go down there, I'm going with you. And so we get down there and they do the press conference. Everyone's taking their photos. And Deborah's kind of like pacing back and forth in the background. And I'm getting nervous because I'm like, okay, he has security guards. I don't know what's going to happen. And then, you know, she's eyeing Rick Scott and he's talking to some folks. And then I see him go to that back door. And Deborah heads to the back door and a security guy comes out to meet her. And I see him whisper back and forth a couple things. Next thing you know, I see that security guard. He runs back through that back door and goes. Deborah comes back. I said, Deborah, what happened? What's going on? And he goes, oh, he's going to go get Rick Scott. I said, are you serious? Sure enough, a couple minutes later, the guy comes back through that side door and says, he wants you to the office. And I said, this is unreal. So we literally went there. It was just a press conference. And to her word, she got us into his office. We went up to Rick Scott's office. We got to sit down with him. She got to share our stories, and you know, we brought some of our guardians, some of our sponsors that were community sponsors that have been there through us to speak with them face to face, and you know, that was just an unreal experience. But that's just a one. Like I said, I have many stories about this program, and it just goes to show that, I mean, that's why I can never tell her no. She is an ultimate advocate for these children. She works tirelessly for them, and there's nothing that she wouldn't do to help these kids. And she's my hero.
Well, having covered the Capitol for, oh gosh, more than 30 years, I can attest to the fact that a one-on-one with the governor is not a usual occasion.
No.
It took some gumption to do that, yeah. Deborah.
Well, you know, that's what we do every day is we speak up for these children, and you know, that's we have to be their voice. We have to share the experiences they're going through. Many times, it's wonderful that they're able to do that for themselves, and to facilitate that is a pretty special experience too. You know, you were talking about the guardians being able to drive, and something that our program statewide is working very hard on is being able to get the word out about it's called Keys to Independence Act. But, you know, we're so concerned that many of our youth that we support who turn 18, and actually the law's been changed so that youth can opt to stay in foster care till they're 21, but only 2% of youth leaving foster care to be completely on their own. No family to stay with, no family to help pave the way for their independence. Only 2% have their driver's license, which is a huge part of being independent, being able to get to school, being able to get to their job. So I'm just so proud that, you know, we see that as a barrier and as an issue, and that shouldn't be. We have to change that. We have to make that better for the youth. They have so many other challenges. As you can imagine, any of us have experienced when we turn 18, we're not ready. We need support. We need help. I mean, it's right. Way beyond needing a driver's license, but 2%, that's terrible. And so we've got to remove those barriers. We've got to make that something that happens for our youth. They need to have someone showing them how to drive. They need to be able to be supported with having insurance and, you know, having that skill and having that capability when they leave to be on their own and ensure that they can be as successful as possible over and above the barriers that have been put in front of them because of their unfortunate circumstances. So that's something that we're looking forward to and promoting this year. So I'm very excited about that. And locally here in our program, we have a great committee of volunteers who are passionate about older youth, and they've come together. And our goal this year is that we want to make sure that when youth leave and are out on their own, they have all the things that they need. And I'm so proud about that because a lot of people in the community would be shocked to believe that our youth leave and, you know, they don't have a bed. They don't have, a TV. They don't have household goods. And, you know, all that, they have to figure out a way to accumulate on their own. And so we're just determined that we're going to pave the way for success, and we're going to Brian and CA2 has been helpful in getting us a storage facility. So we're going to start collecting beds and household goods and things like that. And they can come in and pick things out that they need and, you know, just really feel that independence and that support that's so critical at such a critical time in any youth life.
Another advocate told me when – this is back when foster kids aged out at 18 before it became 21. Mm-hmm. But described the process as kind of like a grown-up getting out of prison, except they don't get the $20 and a new suit and a bus ticket. It right. was like, okay, kid, you're on your own. And that's got to be devastating.
Mm-hmm. We have so many of our advocates now. I'll tell you another great story is what prompted me really to do this, because I've known this was an issue of the youth needing these things when they leave. But she called me one day, and she'd been working with this youth for about a year and a half, and he's on his own in school. Thank goodness he's in school, and that's an absolutely wonderful thing that he's chosen to do that for himself and for his life and his success. But she said that she was wondering if we could help put the word out to our other guardians that he needed a bed and he needed something to sit on in the living room and all those kinds of things and needed household goods. And so we put the word out to all of our 340 guardians, and within the week we had the place furnished. And she said, you know, actually she had finished serving as his guardian ad litem, and she was basically mentoring him. And that's been another great thing that we've done, is starting to train our guardians to not only be advocates but mentors. And she has stayed on with him. And the case is closed in the courts, but she stayed on with him because she knows how important that support and that continuity for him is. And she's going to stay involved with him as long as he needs her to.
Oh, my gosh. And for a guy who perhaps people have been floating in and out of his life on a random basis for so many years, to have that kind of of connection and dedication, just terrific. The Guardian Ad Litem program for Florida's Second Judicial Circuit is what we're talking about. Also an upcoming fundraiser, a delicious fundraiser you can get involved with, too. We'll be talking about that more when Perspectives rolls on. 414-1234-800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org. Back on Perspective, so glad you could be a part of it, either on the other end of the radio waves or the telephone line if you prefer, 414-1234-800-926-8809. Deborah Moore, head of the Second Judicial Circuit Guardian Ad Litem Program, along with Brian Seely, Board President of Child Advocates 2, and Christine Lamont, Cupcakes and Cookies for Kids Event Chair. Another plug for that right now coming up February 8th, Leon High Cafeteria, 2 to 4.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. And during the break here, I heard the competition. This is a challenge and a competitive event. Is starting to heat up already.
It is. It's a great thing. We had one of our people, we had another fundraiser that was a detective thing one night, and one of the prize, if you guessed who the murderer was an entry into this. And so we have that. The lady is preparing a cookie recipe that's been very successful. I can't wait to taste those. And so, yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun because you can use your creativity. We have Celebrate Florida. What does Florida mean to you? Does it mean Margaritaville? Does it mean oranges or whatever? For the kids, we have a fairy tale cupcake. You could do that, or a school spirit cupcake. So, you know, we have gluten-free for those who have dietary issues. So there's a lot of different categories you can choose from to express yourself, and you can do cupcakes or cookies. The only thing is everything is scratch. No, you know, no tubes from the grocery store.
Oh, you can't go to Publix and just darn.
But, you know, that's part of the fun of it, particularly for the children, I think, is to get that opportunity. We had, I know, one mother and daughter. They were with us the other day doing on one of the morning shows. And so she got to demonstrate her cupcakes. And, I mean, she's so excited about having that opportunity to do that. And I think, you know, it's going to be a very successful entry because she's having fun. She and her mother have had fun doing this. And then they're going to do it. And it'll help us raise money to help other children.
Do you have any idea in mind? Of course, this is first time, so it's hard to judge. But, you know, do you have like a goal in mind of what you'd like to raise out of Christine?
Not so much in money per se. I mean, if we could get you know, I would love if we could get 50 entries, that would be absolutely fantastic. And again, you know, you get to pick your level. We're hoping, we realize it's a busy time for professional caterers and bakers coming up on the thing. But if you're a professional, you can bring your your advertising materials, you know, with you when you come. But, you know, it's just an opportunity to share and look and see what's going on. So hopefully we'll, you know, we can take as many, but if we could get 50 our first year, that would be absolutely fantastic. And then we can go from there. We do have sponsorships. We're still accepting sponsorships. You know, so far I think Track Engineering is a sponsor. La Red Krona in Monroe is a sponsor. Tallahassee State Bank signed on the other day,
yay,
you know, which is great. So we are doing that. I know EarthShare is – we have some in-kind sponsors. EarthShare is doing some in-kind donations for us. Allsco's providing linens, you know, to let us lend some. So we're getting those too. And so the community is responding, and we still have a couple weeks yet. So I know I think I have one – there's someone coming in the mail. Haven't gotten that one yet, so I can't announce that, but we're looking forward to that. but again, the community comes out and supports. And in this case – you can support as a sponsor. You can support by buying a ticket to come sample cupcakes or cookies, or you can support by entering. So there's all different ways you can help, and we're hoping that that will capture most of the community.
And that website is GAL, which stands for Guardian Ad Litem. I actually pieced that together. GAL2.org/cupcakes.
And that will take you, and you can read the rules, the competition. You can buy tickets. You can enter the competition, become a sponsor, all through online. And so that's helpful. But
you can stand outside the cafeteria and just drool?
Yes, you can. You can. You can walk in and look at everything. And if you just – yeah, if you want to exercise self-discipline, you don't have to – you know, you can just come in and look. But if you buy the ticket, if you want to sample something, you can buy a ticket and then you just exchange it. We will have cupcake boxes. So if you want to get some extras and take them home, you can do that. And you just have a – you know, you exchange a stamp for a mini cupcake or a cookie, something like that, or a box. And so you can fill it. If you use up your ticket, then you can go get another ticket. So they'll be available.
Go buy five or ten and just give them people. Just
but,
walk around giving away.
But it's a lot of fun because you can sample different things. You can take, you know, taste all over. So, and it's a good opportunity for the professional bakers to advertise their wares too. So if you want them to drop by your cupcake shop on Valentine's Day, here's a Saturday before. You can find out what's there. They can give you sample entries. You can, you know, advertise your menus. So we're hopeful that some of the professionals will also join this.
Nudge, nudge, hint, hint.
Yes, nudge, nudge, hint, hint.
To the phones we go. Nancy is waiting on line one here on Perspectives. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. You had mentioned that the children in Apalachicola, Franklin County, are being helped. And my question, which I can take off air, is how about the children in East Point? Are they also being helped out with the program? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Appreciate that. Deborah Moore?
Yes. Yes, they are. I guess in that area all the way to Apalachicola, we're serving about 25 children altogether. And as of today, I believe it's 100% of the children in that area. If the listeners want to talk some more about that, if I can give a phone number,
sure,
for them to call, and I'm happy to help them, and because we definitely want to make sure that you know, we can answer any questions of any concerns as well. But my direct line is 850-606-1218, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And on my voicemail, there lists my cell number. You can reach me if I'm away from the office.
Okay. And Nancy, you were talking, by the way, to Deborah Moore, who heads up the Second Judicial Circuit Guardian Ad Litem program. So you took it right to the top from the get-go. Reed's on line two, giving us a ring. Hey, Reed.
Hey, Tom. Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year to you, too, my man.
Question for you. I know when – for your panel, it occurred to me as I was listening that when we're talking about the welfare of a child, there's sadly a lot of competing interests sometimes with parents and guardians and the courts and other agencies and even politics. And I was wondering how the guardian ad litem volunteers are trained to recognize and to deal with these types of scenarios that could potentially be adversarial.
Boy, that is a great question, Reed. How do you handle that, Deborah? Because we like to think that everything just sort of moves along swimmingly and without a lot of potential for conflict. But I, like you said, every situation is different and it could happen.
Yeah. And Reed, thank you for your question. And it's one that we answer frequently, and it's understandable that there are those concerns. The parents and the families are going through some very difficult circumstances, and everything is pretty heated at times and very emotional. It's a very difficult situation everybody's going through. So we do provide training. That was a really good question, and that's a big part of our pre-service training. Each of our guardians have an interview with me or our volunteer recruiter. And from there, everyone enters into some certification training, close to 30 hours, including some court observation. Part of that training, we spend time with individuals to talk about their visits in the home, communicating with families, communicating with relatives, with caseworkers, and of course, most importantly, with the children. We're very fortunate that we have had situations where everyone is upset about things, and it's an upsetting situation. But our guardians learn from support of us that we share with individuals that we're there for their children. We're there to make things better for their children. And so most people aren't going to argue with that too much. But we also tell them not to go into any situation that they feel like might put themselves in danger or at risk. We have each of our new guardians has a peer mentor, and the peer mentors have been guardians for many, many years and love helping new guardians and go on visits with them are there with them sometimes for their first court hearing or for their first visit, and to make sure that they're comfortable and that they know how to answer any questions that might come up. But it's really a good question, because it is something that we deal with from time to time. Sometimes we make recommendations that family members might not agree with or parents might not agree with. And we tell them that, they have individuals to represent them and what they think is best. But our responsibility is to represent what we feel like is in the best interest of the child.
Yeah, that's got to be difficult to juggle and balance all those things around. But I love the idea of having a more experienced guardian to kind of take a newbie under his or her wing and help them along with that process. Mm-hmm. Does it take a lot of time, Brian Seeley, as far as having to devote hours and hours and hours every month to the Guardian Ad Litem program?
I would say no, but the reality is that once you actually meet the child and you actually get the case and you draw that connection with that child, you can easily spend a few hours a week, just checking on him, making sure that you visit with the school, you visit with his teachers, because it's our responsibility at that point. Like Deborah said, to create that story for the child, because like you mentioned, there are a lot of competing interests. There's a lot of, it's a new experience for the child. It could be very, very intimidating. And so when you're able to meet with him or her and hear their story and then talk to their teacher, talk with their doctor, talk to this person, talk to everybody, because you're going to create a report that the judge will read. And we'll take into consideration. And so when you have the responsibility, you take it seriously and you're very passionate about it. You will spend time. Yeah.
Christine Lamont, we didn't get to one of your stories there. Do you have one that kind of sticks out in your mind, either, good or bad?
Well, I think it's a good story. And I appreciate it in my training, because one of the things I remember from training is that they were saying, you're not trying to create your family life for a child. You're trying to help create a functional family life for a child. And so that was very good. And in the first case I got assigned, it was complex because the child had things ended up being 180 degrees different than what had initially been presented. But so it was a lot to learn and absorb. But in learning the family members and the different piece, the stuff I learned, and then to recognize, even if in this case maybe the family had different parenting standards and guidelines, the mother was a fierce advocate for her child. She would get frustrated with the system but it's because she was a fierce advocate for her child and her family. So by stepping back a little and recognizing that, then that's actually, I think, how we built our relationship, so that when life got particularly difficult for the child, the mother, the grandmother, the families, the DCF, all the people, along with the guardian, we were all on the same page as to what we felt was best for the child. So we ended up all working together, which, you know, for what everybody agreed was the child's best interest, which isn't sometimes can be a difficult thing, but it ended up with a very happy ending, because from that agreement that we had at one time, the child went through some treatment. And things are, from what I hear, the case is closed now, things are going very well. She got her life back on track with her family. And that's very gratifying.
And I think, too, to add on to it is that, I think the greatest advantage with the Guardian Ad Litem program is that the guardians, we're not dealing with 25 cases. We don't have that. You're dealing with one case. And then if you I don't have anything else to do, you can take another case. So, am I right? Basically everyone has maybe one, maybe two cases. But when you're in that environment, your full attention is strictly on that child. So it definitely goes to the children's advantage to have a guardian ad litem on their side who can devote the attention that they've been lacking all their life.
Well, right now, around 350 guardians, you say, Deborah Moore, to help out 450 kids, running about 97% of the children with a guardian. But it sounds like you could use maybe one or two more.
We always are happy to have individuals get involved with us because, we are – you're right. We're doing very well with ensuring that the children have that support. But we have guardians who this past month we had a handful of guardians who moved out of the area. And so we need to replace those guardians. And those kinds of things happen. Those are life circumstances. And so we are always interested in talking with individuals and get them involved with us to help in some capacity, whether it's as an advocate or helping to support the nonprofit and their efforts, which we so much appreciate. So everyone has my direct line, and that's one of my favorite things every day is to either talk with our staff and volunteers about the good things we're doing or talk with individuals and find a way to get them connected with us.
And you gave out your number as 606-1218 with the 850 area code, of course. And then you can go on to the Second Judicial Circuit website. Does that also have a link to the Guardian Ad Litem program, Deborah?
It's GAL2.org. Individuals can find out more about getting involved to support the other activities that our board's involved with, like our school supply drive, our holiday drive that we have. But it's all inclusive, so they can click on a button saying, I want to volunteer, and it'll bring them to our volunteer application and our training schedules. The next one's coming up in February.
Ah, okay. That's good to know. And if they put a slash and a cupcake on there, then
goes
Christine.
Straight to us. Yes.
That's
right.
They go to you.
They do. And they can find out more about CA2 as well off that page because if they are doing the support that way.
Yeah, and I love that idea too about companies or other organizations getting involved as like a group project.
Oh, yeah.
To adopt the Guardian Ad Litem program or perhaps offer some kind of in-kind, like, hey, why don't you come to our facility? We have fun things for the kids to do or whatever.
Right. We've been very blessed. I can name from Moe's, Starbucks, FSU that have just opened their doors for us. So, we love the support and we really appreciate this city. It's been great.
We have some groups in the community that'll drive their car up, open the back, and we load out. Load onto a cart several packs of diapers. We're so excited that
Deloitte.
Day.
We just, yeah, Deloitte. I mean, Deloitte has come out in
Deloitte.
Over the
holidays, over the past few years, loaded up an SUV with just tons of diapers, and they just. The volunteers are up there that next day getting them out to the children and the families just as fast as they come in. And we love that. That means so much to us to have companies that know how hard we work and how important it is for us and what we do and to help us to be successful. That's such a great day when that happens.
I can share a quick story with Moe's. Moe's was about a year ago. They were opening a new location, and you know, they reached out and said through a mutual friend of ours that, hey, look, we want to support the program. And so they opened their doors, and people will come in. They'll go out to the whole Moe's, get their meal. When they got to that cash register, they'll tell them, no, there's no charge. Give a donation. And they filled up that donation tank for us. And, I mean, we made over $1,000 in a few hours. And I mean, that's just from the kindness of those of the owners there of Moe's here locally. It's that's the sort of support, just one example of support that we've had in this community, and we're so appreciative of it.
Well, the other thing too, before we take off here, is time runs short, is hoping that on top of the community support and the voluntary support that you folks get for the Guardian Ad Litem program, now with the higher visibility of child welfare, it seems, in the Florida legislature and the session kicking off the first part of March, that may be a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Deborah Moore,
yes,
thank you so
thank
much
you.
For coming in. Brian Seeley and, of course, Christine Lamont. I want a cupcake.
I'll
see you on the 8th over at Leon. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox on the board today, and Lydell Rawls handling the phones and email chores. I'm Tom Flanagan. Lynn Hatter taking the point next week. She'll be talking about the Working Well Initiative with that CEO breakfast coming up shortly. Have yourself a good week, and we'll catch you soon.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.